eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
Coming strong with another edition of Longhorn Blitz with Horns 24/7. I am Jeff Howell. Let's not waste any time. Get right into it. A few housekeeping items. First of all, wherever you're listening, however you're listening, thank you so much for continuing to support Longhorn Blitz. Multiple ways you can get this podcast, but the best way, the way that we prefer you to get it, is anywhere you get your podcast. Search Horns 24/7. That's Horns 247. No dashes, slashes, or spaces. Click that follow button whenever the podcast feed pops up, and you will get every episode of Longhorn Blitz when it drops first thing on Wednesday morning. And if you'd be so kind, please leave us a 5-star review. We would greatly appreciate it. Now, let me bring in the rest of the team. He is the master of the soundboard, the drop machine extraordinaire, our lead research analyst on Longhorn Blitz, and a daily fantasy guru. He is Matt Butler. How are you, sir?
Doing pretty well, man. How about you?
Man, I can't complain. And the third member of our team, I don't think I've ever heard him complain about anything. He wears many hats. He's busier than a one-armed paper hanger. But for the purposes of this podcast, he is our lockdown corner here on Longhorn Blitz. Lifetime Longhorn, 2002 UT All-American, 2002 semifinalist for the Jim Thorpe Award, fourth-round draft choice of the New York Giants back in 2003, spent his NFL career with Giants, Lions, Bears, Bucks, Broncos, and a year with the Hamilton Tigercats of the CFL. When he was done with the football, he got himself back to Austin, Texas, and the 40 Acres, where he earned his degree. Whenever that T-ring comes back in, we will make sure he wears it proudly. Nevertheless, he is a card-carrying member of DBU, and when you get that All-American honor recognized by the NCAA, they make sure you get one of those black cards. Number 21 in your program, number one in your hearts, Mr. Rod Babers. Rod, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Thanks for the intro, brother. I appreciate it each and every time.
I do my best. Rod, I know something else you appreciate is the NFL draft. You were lucky enough, Rod, yourself, to be a fourth-round selection, number 123 overall back in the 2003 NFL draft. Rod, I got to stop saying the year you were drafted because I'm dating you, man. I'm dating you from way back when.
Trust me, I know. Yes, yeah, I feel it. Trust me, I feel it every day too.
What is it? Is it the? How are your shoulders doing, by the way? Because I know you had a couple different shoulder procedures. The shoulder holding up pretty well.
Yeah, but I mean, it won't age well. None of it will, man. That's just the reality of it. Those types of injuries, because I had my shoulder worked on, both shoulders actually. Yeah. I had injuries. And three different shoulder surgeries. So I can't throw a football like overhand. Like I got, you know, every now and then, like, you know, I can kind of feel it either slipping out or, you know what I mean? Like I can lift a certain way and I can, it's one of those things that you never really recover from stuff like that.
I'm not kidding you, Rod. I threw an apple that I had to throw out a couple weeks ago. And I made the mistake of throwing it overhand. And man, my shoulder hurt for like 2 or 3 days.
It bro, just trust. I feel that.
It can't go over. Like my daughter's playing T-ball now. She decided she wanted to play T-ball. So I'm like, hey, underhand grounders, I can do that all. We can do underhand grounders all day. I can throw those
Throwing Rich Gannon style, man. A little sidearm on them.
You know, we're not talking about throwing sidearm, though, when we talk about the NFL draft, because Texas doesn't have any quarterbacks in the draft this year. Probably next year with Quinn Ewers, we'll see how the 24 season plays out. But, you know, guys, it's exciting, man. We didn't do a ton of draft talk. It was 2 years ago because it was basically like, look, man, if Cameron Dicker doesn't hear his name called, there probably ain't going to be a Texas guy drafted. I feel like we've been pretty realistic with the draft. But, man, Texas could actually set the record, the 7-round record for most draft picks, and get close to no, they're not going to beat that that record that the 84 draft set where they had 13 guys drafted, but it's going to be Rod. It's going to be a very prosperous draft. It's nice to get back to draft weekend where if you're a Texas fan, man, you can, and I say this because combine invites went out, we got the combine coming up, the pre-draft process, Senior Bowl, all that stuff's already done. It's nice when you're a Texas fan and you can lock into the draft and be invested in it from start to finish.
Yeah, and I agree with you, actually, because I mean, not everyone is, you know, both a college football fan and an NFL fan. I am, but I realize everyone, there's some people that just college football fans and some people that just watch the NFL. I'm both, so I love this transition period, man. It's one of my favorite periods because it's almost a season in itself. The scouting season with, you know, you got the bowl, call it the silly season, but you got, you know what I mean? You got the bowl games and everything to kind of evaluate the postseason of college football. Then the guys go to the, you know, the Reese's Senior Bowl and Shrine Bowl. So you have those. And then you get to the combine time and the pro days and then the NFL draft. I love following the entire process. And a lot of it is ridiculous. That's why they call it the silly season. But for me, a guy like me who loves, you know, the transition from college to the NFL, and it just kind of helps me with my analysis of the NFL too. I think it's one of my favorite times of the year, and I'm glad the Longhorns now are heavily represented because I can just kind of take my knowledge that I have of these guys, and it really makes draft day fun, makes the combine fun because there is so much Longhorn representation. So it's good for the brand, of course, because that's how you sell the brand. Every player that's ever been recruited to play college football wants to play in the NFL. 100% of them. There ain't one that ever played college football. It's like, nah, I don't really want to play in the league. No, they all want to play in the league. That's the goal. That's the dream. And I'm glad now that Texas can sell. Not only are they competing for championships, but, you know, they can help you accomplish your ultimate goal and your dream. And Sark knows. That's why Sark has the NFL ties with a lot of guys now. You know, I mean, that's big on the resume of some of the coaches, whether that be a player or as a coach. I think he wants to be able to talk to these young players he's recruiting or even the ones in the transfer portal and be able to say, hey, man, we know how it looks. We know the steps that need to be taken. We all coached in the league. We can help you get there. And now you're going to be able to see that in real time.
Yeah, because now you're at the point where it isn't even necessarily selling the program, which Sark has done a really good job to get all these guys in here. But then you've seen the development, and now to actually get the tangible results and be able to put on paper and show how many players Texas may get into the draft. And, you know, this one, if you look at just the top 7 rounds, because like this draft nowadays, we only have 7. Back in 84, I believe it was 12, and 7 players from Texas in 84 were drafted from 8 through 12. So if you look at just the top 7 rounds, this could be one of the best drafts Texas football has ever had. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of the context to keep this year in, because the elite talent Texas has, I mean, we talked about it over the last couple of weeks, and, you know, there's varying mock drafts across the board, but you got a good handful of guys that have a chance to be a first round pick. Like, I think Byron Murphy for sure is locked that up. And then, I mean, one of the receivers probably is going to creep into that background. And then you could see Sweat creep into some part of that first round probably. And even if there's a run on tight ends, I know I was listening to Rod's show this morning and he mentioned JT Sanders, and sometimes it becomes just a supply demand type scenario. And especially the way that when you look at, you know, what wins in the NFL and that value, you can get receivers really deep. But when you look at like who's won the Super Bowl over like the past 15 years, really since like the Gronk era began, man, there's always an elite tight end on top the NFL. When you look at the top Super Bowl winning teams, there isn't necessarily that top end receiver. So there could be some smart teams that understand the premium positions and how it's sort of morphed in recent years. And that could really add to JT's value.
Yeah. You think about it. We talked about that on a podcast last year at some point, and I remember just thinking, you know, obviously we've got this run of NFL tight ends, whether you're talking about Travis Kelce or Gronk, and go down the list. But man, even, you know, when we were watching ball and Rod back in the late 80s, early 90s, you think about some of those Super Bowl champions like Mark Bavaro, what he meant to the Giants, or Jay Novacek with the Cowboys, Brent Jones with the 49ers, Mark Chimura with the Packers. You know, we talk about the running game of Mike Shanahan. They also had one of my all-time favorite quarterbacks in John Elway. As a matter of fact, on my personal list, he's the only guy that I rank. I rank Tom Brady above everybody else, and then John Elway is number two for me. But, man, you had a Hall of Fame tight end on those Broncos teams with Shannon Sharpe. So there is value in having a really good tight end. But, I mean, for both of you, whichever one of you guys wants to take it, Matt, you mentioned the seven-round format. The seven-round format for the draft started in 94, and – in the seven-round format, the record for Texas for draft picks in a single draft, it's only seven. And it was in 2007. That was the last time Texas had multiple first-round picks. Michael Griffin and Aaron Ross actually went back-to-back in the first round in that draft. But only seven. I could have sworn there was a draft where there was more, but I don't know, man. It just shows you that, you know, Rod, you played for Mack Brown, and there were some great times. Mack won a national championship. Could have won a couple others, but it just shows you, man, even in a prosperous time like that, one of the true golden eras of the program, man, there was still some meat left on the bone. And if you're Sark, I'm glad he mentioned it in his last press conference where he talked about that obsession. It's we've seen it be done at Texas, but there's still another level that you can get to. And maybe this draft is another tangible sign that, man, maybe Sark can get you there. Maybe there is another level where this program can go beyond where Matt got it.
There is. But I will say, you know, Sark has the luxury of being in the NIL era.
Very true.
Texas is arguably, you know, in terms of, obviously, the value of the brand when Texas has more sugar daddies than almost any other university out there, and Texas can be a leader in the NIL space, which is you know, inextricably linked to the transfer portal, which helps you attract talent. And one of your guys, A.D. Mitchell, is going to be a first-round pick transfer. You know, that stuff Mack didn't have access to. And honestly, I don't even know if Mack would have weaponized it in the manner that Sark has. I'm not saying that at all. So I'm giving Sark credit for, you know, being in the new age of college football and being modern, being progressive, taking advantage of those opportunities. But that is also adding to it, too. So I think if Mack had that, that would be a different discussion. But I think you're right. There is another level. And I think Sark can reach it because of the things that I just mentioned. NIL, transfer portal, all of those things are benefiting Texas in this new age. And I think ultimately, when we talk about the separation of the have and have nots, which is growing, is becoming more and more, you know, distinct, the separation.
Yeah.
I think ultimately, you know, Texas will continue this trend. I mean, there's nothing right now that, in my opinion, is pointing to this stopping. I think Texas is kind of just starting in this NIL era being the law of the land. I think Texas at this point, along with probably 10, 12 maybe other universities, are going to dominate this era of college football because they have the resources and the advantage of a very affluent donor base. Mm.
Do you have anything to add on that, Matt?
No, just was adding up different drafts across the board. And yeah, that 84 draft really did have a lot of players drafted pretty high because you had Masi Kago in the first, and then you had 2 seconds, 2 thirds, a fourth, 3 in the fifth, and then 1 in the seventh. So that's still right there, I believe. 10 got 10 teams. So that 10 in the top 7, that sort of looks to be that benchmark if you look across program history, because every other year, there really wasn't anything else other than that 07 year that you brought up. And I mean, that's a great one because you had two first rounders, two second rounders, and all of which were friends of the show also, it looks like. And other than that, across the board, those would be your two deepest drafts that Texas has ever had.
Well, I tell you what, man, you talk about just looking at some of these drafts, and these are names that some Texas fans probably haven't thought about in a minute. And there's going to be a portion of our, like, you know, Jordan Scruggs on our staff. Jordan's on our recruiting team. He and Hank South. I've got to reference names, Roger. I think Jordan was born in 2004, 2003. So I'm like, man, when I talk about, like, you know, guys from the late 90s, like, Jordan has no reference of any of these guys. It's like me looking at the guys I'm fixing to mention. But, like, you look at the 80 draft, man, you had three first-rounders, Lamb Jones, Johnny Johnson, Derek Hatchett, Steve McMichael going in the third round, Ricky Churchman went in the fourth round. That is five guys going in the top 100, and that's like the height of, you know, Fred Akers was really had things rolling at that point. You go to 82, top 100 picks, Kenneth Sims, Bruce Schultz, Terry Tosh, Lawrence Sampleton. That's four in the top 50. So, yeah, you're getting – we've seen it when Texas has it rolling. That's the kind of draft production that you're having. But I think for the amount of, and I mentioned the top 50 stuff because, or even the top 100 picks, because Rod, we talked about it. I think it used to be, you know, are you a day two pick? Because or a day one pick, because back in, you know, when you were going through the draft was rounds one through three were on Saturday and the rest of the draft was on Sunday. It was only over 2 days. Now, you know, you've got it. One's on Thursday and then the two on Friday and then the rest of it on Saturday. I just kind of look at it like if you're a top 100 pick, that means you're going at least in the third round. I think that's is that what we've settled on, kind of being like a premium round draft selection if you're going in the top, first 100 picks?
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Yeah, that's usually kind of that would be the cutoff for me. I mean, if you're a top 50, then you're right. Then you go into toward the elite level. If you're first round guy, man, that's rarified status.
Yeah. Because the two guys I think about why I put the top 50 in there, why it's important to me, there's two guys, you know, Aaron Williams and Justin Blaylock. Like, both those guys were first-round talents. It's just the way – it's not their fault the way things fell in the draft. I think Aaron Williams went 34. I think Justin Blaylock was 37. So, like, you're basically a first-round caliber player at that point. It's just maybe there was a run on a position that knocked you down the board or whatever the case was. But – we mentioned those type picks, and you know, when I wrote the story, I wrote my first draft story. Daniel Jeremiah had just put out his top 50, and you know, there's so many draft publications now. So many people do so much good work. As a matter of fact, right now as we do this, Matt Miller's having a conference call. I remember when I think Matt was working at Bleacher Report, and we would kind of text back and forth or DM back and forth about, you know, hey, one of these days Texas will have, you know, a really good draft. And lo and behold, it's the best draft Texas has had in 14, 15 years. And Matt's one of the big wigs doing it at ESPN now. So props to him. He's actually having a conference call right now for everybody around the country, media members around the country, calling to get his thoughts on the draft. But he had Daniel Jeremiah. I say that, you know, whoever you follow on the draft is who you follow. But Daniel Jeremiah of the NFL Network put out his top 50. Five Longhorns in that top 50: Byron Murphy, A.D. Mitchell, Jatavion Sanders, Xavier Worthy, Tavondre Sweat. Rod, does that sound right to you? I mean, we're talking about those five guys pretty much as being, whether you want to call them first-round talents or not, they're at their respective positions. They're kind of in that group that, man, if you think you're going to hang around, maybe get those guys in the third round, you're probably going to be SOL on that front.
I think that's pretty accurate, because I think most of the guys' draft stock is about to increase. I look at A.D. Mitchell. From what I hear, A.D. Mitchell is capable of running a 4.4, a high 4.4. If he does, he's gonna get drafted in the first round. Yeah. With the film that's showing his body control, his size, his ability to accelerate, decelerate, catch radius, precision route running. I mean, he's got the lowest drop rate of any of the top tier wide receivers in the draft too. The only thing that they're missing in their evaluation as a data point to confirm first round status would be his flat out straightaway speed. Mm-hmm. And from what I hear, he actually does have it. It just, you know, may not have been on display all the time, you know, in terms of, being able to see it on the film, but it does translate. So for him, I think his draft stock is going to increase when he runs. Byron Murphy, you know, he's already guaranteed to be a first round pick. Everything that I've seen, he is the first Longhorn drafted off the board. A.D. Mitchell's the one that's going to sneak into the first round. But go look at Jim Nagy. He's the Senior Bowl executive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he's over at the Senior Bowl. Go look at his Twitter. Even today, he's got a thread about Tavondre Sweat. And I'll just make sure I can find it so I don't want to misquote him here. This is what he said about Tavondre Sweat. He says basically that Tavondre Sweat should not drop out of the first round. He says, quick Senior Bowl, and he has an emoji there, so I'm not even going to try to interpret that, to show why Texas nose tackle Tavondre Sweat shouldn't get out of the first round. And he has a thread showing why he shouldn't get out of the first round. I'm not saying he's going to be a first round pick, but if you look at the trend of the NFL, I could see a team deciding he's exactly what we need at the back of the first round, or a team trading up to go get him. Because the trends of the NFL are now they're playing close to 45%, you know, too high pre-snap zone coverages. And what that means essentially is that you're playing with lighter boxes. If you're playing with lighter boxes, you need bigger human beings with girth, with mass up front to either demand a double team, which flips the numbers advantage back in your favor, even though you're playing with a lighter box, fewer defenders than blockers, and big time D tackles like potentially what Tavondre Sweat could be. Mm-hmm. Or in the NFL, you're going to look at the top 16 highest paid defenders in the NFL this past season, and 8 of them are interior defensive linemen, and that's not even a premium position, right? And you go look at half of the top defenders in guaranteed salary from last season, 6 of the top 12 interior defensive linemen, yet not a premium position because it hasn't caught up with where the NFL is going. There won't these big bodies who are premium force run defenders on early downs and who can be pass rushing specialists on passing downs. And Tavondre Sweat's got that kind of ceiling. Now, will he end up becoming that? I don't know, but he was just that at the college level. And if he becomes that at the NFL level, that's Chris Jones is about to break the bank right now because Aaron Donald's the best, but he's second best behind Aaron Donald at that interior defensive line position. And with what you want are big bodies like Tavondre Sweat, who are so damn massive that essentially they can take up more than one gap with just the sheer size and mass of their body, or guys like Byron Murphy who demand a double team because they're so damn quick and they're so damn disruptive and they're so impactful at the point of attack, and they can be force run defenders early and then switch up and become pass rushing specialists on third down. Both of those guys have that ability, and that's the kind of the point that Jim Nagy's making, that hey man, this guy, if a team really dives into him and they really believe that he's kind of their missing piece to their defense being great, it'll drive up his draft value, because that's kind of where the NFL is going. They're playing with lighter boxes. They want to devote numbers to stop the pass, matchups up front to stop the run. Those are guys that are matchup advantageous type players like Tavondre Sweat and like Byron Murphy. Just throwing it out there, he could sneak in there too. And I agree that I've seen some mocks with JT Sanders sneaking in the first round. That'll all be based on where Brock Bowers is drafted. If Brock Bowers goes early on top 5 to the Chargers or something like that, then his stock will increase because teams will go, damn it, best tight ends off the board. If we want a tight end, like you're a Miami or something like that, you think he's the missing piece, you may get a little bit desperate and draft him early in the first round. So I think it's possible they could have 4 first rounders. I think it's probably the odds are they'll have 2, and Texas will dominate the second round of the draft with potentially, you know, JT Sanders, Tavondre Sweat, hell, Jonathan Brooks is still the top running back on the board right now. So Worthy. That guy has value. Yeah, I mean, it's – yeah, exactly. They look like the second round is probably where Texas is going to have Xavier Worthy. Yeah, they're going to have the most guys drafted. Well, at least not most, but most of their guys drafted in the second round.
Yeah.
Yep, and that's where you pointed it out with Sweat. And, I mean, the numbers – they're going to show everything, because you look on paper and just, you know, everything that we saw from the Senior Bowl, the film, like, it speaks volumes. He's a huge human. The coaches love him. He dominated workouts. But then if you look at the analytics, and just stat nerds are going to be all over Tavondre Sweat, because he finished as like the best run defensive interior lineman in the country. He ended up with a 12.8% run stop percentage, which is elite. Had 24 of them, only missed tackles on 4.4%. Like, you're talking, some of the guys that I see listed inside the top 20 have the double digit, you know, missed tackle percentage. Tavondre Sweat doesn't miss tackles, and he's able to get the run stops in the backfield to force those negative plays. He ended up with way more tackles than basically anybody in the top 10. But when you flip it over to the pass sets, now, Byron Murphy, he's the best in the country. If you go by grading, if you go by pressures, the total amount of times that he was able, his win rate was a 19.6, according to PFF, which is the best in the country. But you know who's number six in the country of all defensive interior linemen? Tavondre Sweat. He had a 15.3% win percentage. His pass rush grade on true pass sets was 88.7, which is also sixth in the country. And this is counting all small sample sizes, too. It doesn't matter if you went and had one snap or you had hundreds of snaps. He's that elite. He's up in the very top. You had Mason Graham from Michigan ranks two behind Murphy. And then you have a guy from Coastal Carolina, Michael Mason. Then there's Narelle Pollard from Virginia Tech and Peebles from Duke. And then you get Sweat and then Hall Jr. from Ohio State. You know, what's really interesting for next season, though, ranked just at number 11 in overall true pass set grade, and then also really high up there in win percentage, Alfred Collins is the 11th best in the country. So even though it was in 218 pass rush sets when Tavondre Sweat had 310 and Murphy had 274, that's still a lot of snaps where you saw Collins get out there. He was in the top, I'd say third in the country in the amount of snaps he saw, and he graded out 11th, which is just elite to have coming back. But to get back to Sweat, when you're the best against the run in the country consensus, you're a top six guy against the pass, and we're talking about being compared against, you know, guys at the bottom of D1 also, and you consider the opponents Texas faced against, that's about as good of a resume as you can get. When you're 365 and you're getting to the quarterback, that's going to soar. Somebody's going to take that risk and move up and get a guy like him, because like you said, Rod, I'd say it almost isn't a premium position these days. Because I know us on this podcast a year or two ago in the offseason pointed out the trend that for multiple years now we've seen the interior linemen getting paid as much or even more. Last year was when they passed up the outside linemen edge rushers, where you have the interior DL being as much or more of a premium than it's ever been before. So it's a great time for Texas to have two of those guys coming out.
Rod, for Sweat, am I crazy when I think that the combine, the most important thing for him is just going to be where he weighs? And I know he didn't weigh in at the Senior Bowl, and I think the reason why is he was on that banquet circuit. Like, he had to go to the Outland Trophy ceremony. And look, if you go to the Outland Trophy ceremony, it's in Omaha. They ain't exactly worried about you eating healthy in Omaha. Trust me, I've been there. It's where I learned the concept of the Italian steakhouse, where they give you steak with a side of spaghetti. So it's not like a lot of carbs going around in Omaha. Right. But so maybe he just felt a little heavy and didn't want to weigh in. I'm sure his agent told him that. But is that going to be the most important thing he does in Indy? Is just what he weighs, where he tips the scales.
Yeah, because he's already proven. I mean, I understand exactly why he didn't weigh in at the Senior Bowl. I mean, you got to play, right?
Yeah.
You're playing, playing weight and performance weight are two different weights for most athletes, right? The weight you actually play at and the weight that you want to test at are different. So he's going to go in with the testing mindset. So I wouldn't doubt that he's 355 or below that. I mean, some of these coaches probably even want to see him below 350. They don't want to see him at 365, which is probably closer to his playing weight. He's got time to lose 10, 12 pounds, slim down for the drills, keep his strength for the bench press, but slim down for the drills, look good and agile for a big man, show off some of that, and kind of, and you know, obviously weigh in lighter. But they know, these guys know that his playing weight is, he's probably closer and comfortable with to being closer to 360. And when he gets drafted, they'll put in his contract a certain weight, and he's got to stay within, I don't know, 5 pounds of that weight, or he'll get fined. And that's the question, right? Is he conditioned enough, well-conditioned enough at that size to be an every-down player? And that ultimately goes back to the weight, and is he going to balloon up when he gets to the NFL if he's drafted by, you know, the New Orleans Saints or the Houston Texans or places with really good food? Is he going to just eat himself out of, you know, the position, eat himself out of being an every-down player? I don't think that's the case, but with really big guys, that is always a huge concern. Can they play at a weight? Can he play every down at that weight, whatever it may be? And I think he can. I really do. I think he's capable of that.
Rod, your former teammate at Texas and your teammate with the Lions, Sean Rogers. I was just looking at Sean Rogers' profile. Sean Rogers was 320 at the combine when he went to the combine, and he played at around 350.
Exactly.
And he was not only was he an every down player, but Rod, you were actually with him in Detroit in 04 when he was a second team all pro. So
yeah, he was, man, when Big Sean set his mind to it, he was among the best D tackles in the league. He really was. Mm-hmm. When he was in his prime, he really was. Yeah. He was legit. And he kind of fits more the T-Sweat profile, honestly.
Mm-hmm. No doubt. So we're looking at the two defense. You brought him up earlier, Rod. Matt, I don't know if you've got anything you want to pull up on Jonathan Brooks, but the Jonathan Brooks case is really interesting to me because he's going to go to the combine. He's not going to be able to do anything, just interview and go through medicals, which are probably going to be big for him because you want to see how that knee's doing in the rehab process. But it's fascinating. I know the position's been devalued. I understand that. But for him to be the number one running back coming off of an ACL, I think that just shows you, one, how the position's been devalued, but two, it's not a great year for running backs, and you feel bad for him. Hell, he might be a high second, maybe sneak his way into the first round if he was healthy. And I don't like going down that road because I'm thinking, man, with a healthy Jonathan Brooks, does Texas win a national championship? Maybe they at least get to Houston. I don't know. But, man, for Jonathan Brooks to still be, some people have him on the board as a second-round guy, the first running back off the board, says a whole hell of a lot about how the NFL looks at that skill set.
Yeah, I mean, everything that I've seen still has him as the top running back on the board. And that's a credit to his film and to really kind of what he accomplished last season. I think that, you know, if he interviews well, which I think he will, and the medical evaluations are going to be the biggest thing for him. I mean, every team's going to want to tug at that injury and get their own kind of diagnosis of it. I wonder if a team will see him kind of as a, give him a red shirt year essentially in the NFL, if a team has that luxury to do that. So I'm looking at teams that have that kind of luxury, right? Who can have a luxury pick of a running back in the first two rounds. And that bodes well for him because that's usually going to be a team that's good. And they can afford to have Jonathan Brooks sit for a while and get healthy and then realize they got, you know, running back one value wherever they get him in it, potentially even in the second round. So and he was great last year, man. I really, it's crazy to think that we all expected, and I expected, I was the main one, a regression, a natural regression at the running back position because of the loss of Rojo and Bijan to NFL running backs. And the truth is, it was not that big of a regression based on the production of Jonathan Brooks. That was fascinating. That was one of the most shocking. That was easily the most surprising storyline of the season. I mean, that guy forced a missed tackle on like 34% of his rushes. I mean, he was unbelievable last season. So
yeah. And his numbers, they really, like, we always talked about it with small samples and certain players. Like, we brought up Byron Murphy when he was a freshman. It's like, man, if this guy now can get, you know, the volume of snaps and just continue on this pace, it's going to be an elite player. And the sample we had with Jonathan Brooks was really small. But, you know, we're like, it's sort of funny when you look at Bijan and Rojo going in and they're both behind Jonathan Brooks each of the last 2 years in yards after contact. Now, it was on 30 attempts and 21, and, you know, small samples and, you know, garbage time, you know, coming in at late in games. It isn't all exactly the same. But then when you go and see what he did this year, it was like his first 2 years receiving the ball. He was 1.46 yards per route run. What was he exactly last year? 1.46 yards per route run. Then he had in 21 and 22, it was 19 missed tackles forced on his 51 carries. Like, that's a really good rate. That's like 37%. Well, he was able to come in and go 63 on 187, which is, like Rod just said, 34% last year, which isn't much of a drop off. When you look at his yards per rush, he was like 6.6, 6.8 his first 2 years in those garbage time carries. Last year, 6.1. He's at 6.2. We pointed out last year when Bijan left early, Bijan broke Ricky's record. Like, 6.2 was a number in your mind that was like, wow, I don't know how a running back can average that for his career at Texas. And now we've had back-to-back running backs in Bijan and Jonathan Brooks for their career average 6.2 yards per attempt. Now, you have Jonathan Brooks on 238 attempts, so he's not going to qualify the way Bijan was to be the all-time leading rusher on a per-attempt basis. But, I mean, it was 6.1 this year, barely any drop-offs. So it's just really cool when you see a guy that has that small sample size, but then when you move him up to volume and he's able to continue to perform at that level and that's against heightened opponents, it's like in the NBA, it's when you see a bench guy go and can do it against starters. That's just a sign of a player that's continuing to develop and outperform his expectations. Like, 140 elusive rating this past season is crazy. He had 150 for a career here at Texas. Just numbers that you can't expect, but the way that Texas is developing these guys, it's been pretty impressive. So it'll be fun to see how the guys work in the next couple years.
You know, you got to give the Tom Herman staff some credit. I know I like to dump on Tom Herman, but we'll give that staff some credit, and really it's Derek Chang in that group that was in the recruiting department at the time. But I think you see that they were on to some things in terms of evaluations. And let's not pretend that, you know, I'm not going to pretend I didn't sit here and say in certain recruiting classes that they made some good evaluations. But the three guys in this draft, and granted, Sark developed these guys. The current regime gets all the credit for it. But Jonathan Brooks, you guys know how many Power 5 offers Jonathan Brooks had when he committed to Texas?
Well, it was like two or something.
Two. He had Texas Tech and Texas. The rest of his offers: Colorado State, Houston Christian, Louisiana, Texas State, and UTSA. Wow. Jonathan Brooks was way off the radar, and they targeted him early. You know, they liked Tavondre Sweat really early. I think Christian Jones, either he was about to commit to SMU or they flipped him from SMU. But Christian Jones, you know, at CBS, Ryan Wilson put out his top 50 big board. He had Christian Jones in the top 40. I think that's probably a little high, but Christian Jones, Rod, I know you heard the buzz about Christian Jones at the Senior Bowl and what he was doing, but I will obviously, again, the credit goes to Sark and the staff for developing those guys, but I'll give that recruiting department under Tom Herman a shout out for them being early on Brooks, early on Sweat, and coming around to end up with Christian Jones. That's probably three top 100-ish picks that staff will have. At least they evaluated and recruited those guys. The current regime, obviously, though, gets the credit for developing them.
No, that's a great point, bro. I'm with you on that. I didn't realize that, but you're right. And yeah, I mean, and a lot of people at Texas didn't really want to see that. Sark says that they don't look at stars in recruiting, right? That they just recruit, you know, guys that are, you know, kind of good for the culture and system. They're not necessarily going off the ratings of the players. And you could say Tom Herman and his staff didn't really either, but it's proof of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And look at that power. I mean, if you look at those guys right there, I mean, with Brooks and with Sweat and Jones, they fit what Herman wanted to do, though, too. And, you know, that's where that a little bit of overlap happens, like where you have an idea that you want to be physical and have a power run game or be able to stop the run. And that's one thing that Sark also, in a different way, maybe from one, or when you look at the nuances, but also highly values. And I love that brought up Christian Jones because it was a number that I brought up before the Washington game. But you look overall, he was as elite as it gets when it comes to run blocking and being a zone blocker in zone schemes. He was sixth in the country amongst all tackles in zone blocking or run schemes, and that was with 375 run snaps, which is a really, really high amount of times to be out there on the field and being able to block within the zone scheme. He was at 81.4 was his zone blocking grade. He was also by far the best just overall run blocker on Texas. It was a 73.8 run grade, but to have the sixth best zone run blocking grade in all of college football, that's a tool that a lot of teams are going to really value highly. And that's why, like in certain, you know, listings, you'll see his name, even though I wouldn't necessarily agree with it, but what do I know? It's like he's ahead of Sweat, I saw in a couple of them, which is, like Jeff said, moving up into like maybe the top 40, which is really impressive.
If you want to get an idea of how smart Christian Jones is, take a look at his offer list when he was coming out of high school. Cal, Virginia, SMU, Dartmouth, Syracuse, Vanderbilt, Yale.
Damn.
Wow.
They're not letting a lot of dummies into those schools.
Yeah.
Seriously. Yeah. He's smart to come to Texas for the football aspect. But, yeah, that's about as good of a recruiting resume for colleges as you could want.
And I'll go back to
– he's coachable as hell, man. He's coachable.
Oh, yeah, man. That's going to be so translatable to the NFL, a smart, coachable lineman that can get out in space and move.
I think, man, and I wrote this story last week. I published over on the site, over at Horns 24/7. But I kind of went back and looked at some of the quotes Christian Jones had like right around senior day. And it's amazing, you know, because let's be honest, man, we didn't – that 2020 season, the COVID year, was so weird. It was really tough to get a feel for anything that year. And the 21 season, let's be honest, man, he was not good. And, you know, he – after that game against Kansas, which actually, weirdly enough, was a game where PFF graded him as one of his highest grades of the year, might have been his highest – but, you know, he gave up a strip sack in that game and, you know, he was getting nasty messages on social media. And he's, you know, after that, he just started kind of, you know, you either have one of two responses. You either kind of move on and, you know, try to get yourself out of that environment, or you bear down and say, no, I'm going to work through it. And that's what he did. And he said he started telling himself in the mirror every morning, you're the best offensive tackle in the country. And he even admitted, he's like, look, when I first started saying it, I didn't believe it. But you know, the more you tell yourself, it's almost like the Costanza thing, right? It's not a lie if you believe it. So, you know, he kept pumping himself up, and Christian Jones left Texas as, Rod, probably what you want your offensive lineman to be. Like, would you love Justin Blaylock or Leonard Davis, a guy that just mauls people? Yeah, but I'll take a Christian Jones 6 days a week and twice on Sunday, a guy that, man, I could just put him out of the position and I don't have to worry about it. He's just going to be, you know, he's going to handle his own, and he might not make a crushing block, but I know he'll do the job, and I don't have to worry about right tackle as long as he's out there. That's where you want your lineman to get.
Yeah, I mean, you just look at his trajectory. He's just gotten better every year. So
yeah,
and he hasn't, you know, obviously been playing football in his frame that long when you actually think about it. Just got this massive frame, in the last like 6 to 7 years, for him, and he's getting better every year. The projections would say, all right, the more he gets used to his frame, and now he's starting to fill out as a grown man, and he's got a background as a guy with good footwork because of his soccer background. That, man, this guy's gotten better every year. He's so coachable and he's smart. You said it, highly intelligent. Why wouldn't he get better with NFL coaching at the NFL level, having to focus strictly on football? So I think that's the upside is why everybody's excited about Christian Jones. What's his upside? Has he reached it? Because it doesn't seem like he has.
Mm-mm. No, and when you look at – I mentioned just like his ability in the run blocking and his – especially in the zone run blocking. But when you go and look at just allowed pressure, the percentage of pressures to Quinn that were allowed by position across the board, at right tackle was as good as it gets. You had right tackle and left guard at just 11.8% of the allowed pressures for the entire team came in at right tackle. So that's really good when you are basically the safest spot on the line in pass protection, and then you grade out in top six in the country in your run heavy zone scheme.
You know, he at the Senior Bowl, before he even took a rep, he's 6'5", 318, hands are 10 3/8 inches, arms are 34 7/8. So he basically got 35-inch arms and 83 7/8 inch on the wingspan. Basically got 35-inch arms and an 84-inch wingspan at 6'5", 318 with over 10 and with, you know, 10 3/8 inch hands. That is a massive human being. And I know people are sick of me saying it, but I'll say it again, man. I hadn't seen Christian Jones. I remember seeing him like in fall camp, his freshman year, his first year on campus. But I'll never forget, man, walking into the Superdome for Sugar Bowl practice when Texas was playing Georgia, and he had the it was the Isaiah Wilson jersey on the for the scout team. He was playing Isaiah Wilson from Georgia, and I just remember looking at him filling out that jersey. I'm like, dude, I'm like, that's exactly how you want an offensive tackle to look. And I'll be damned, man, as he's continued to fill out, and he's all the stuff as an offensive tackle, Rod, that you can't coach and you can't manufacture it. You either got it or you don't.
Yep. Agreed. I mean, that's why Sark, and I love the staff. I think they figured it out late at like corner and secondary. But there are certain things you have to recruit because you just can't coach them.
Yeah.
And that's why he loves big humans, right? He's like, no, big humans. All right, because we can coach everything else. I can't coach that size. I need those guys to have that natural God-given girth. Oh, no, it's a line. I think now they're figuring out can't coach pass rush, can't coach coverage, certain thing, speed, right? Starts big on, mm-hmm. Oh, I need speed on the outside, big humans on the inside. They figured out what they, you know, what they can't coach. And that's also as a coach, I think that's a humbling experience. That's about humility. You know, realizing like, no, I can't coach everything, but just give me those raw tools with, you know, the football foundation and then the football character, all that kind of stuff, which you also sometimes can't coach football character. You got to recruit it. Mm-hmm. All right. That's why they like going to certain programs and getting certain guys, because they, you know, at certain football programs, they weed out bad football character.
Yeah.
So, and they develop it better than others programs and high school football. So I think they figured that out, and that's part of it. And that's certainly part of it with Christian Jones too.
For sure.
Yep. And those traits, like you said, Jeff, if he looked already filled out, and then you're talking about, it's hard to look filled out when you have a 7-foot wingspan. That's insane. Like, that's normally somebody that looks a little lanky or a little bit gawky when you're, say, 7 inches longer than you are tall. But to be filled out with that type of length, that's impressive.
I was just looking, hold on, I was trying to find Kevin Durant's wingspan in inches.
Oh my God.
It's like 7'10" or 7'10", I believe.
Yeah, Kevin Durant's wingspan in inches is 88, basically almost an 89-inch wingspan. Christian Jones is massive at almost 84. Kevin Durant's is another 4 inches.
Yeah.
That's wild. But that gives you an idea of Christian Jones' wingspan, just to – horrible comparison by me, but it just, I don't know, for me it gives me a frame of reference on what I'm looking at. Rod, I'm glad you brought up Sark and the staff in terms of identifying what they can't coach, because Sark got the contract extension, and honestly, like, it's, look, if whether they need to, you know, in 2 years rip up this extension and do a new one because Sark's outperformed it, or, you know, if all hell breaks loose and I don't know, you're looking for a coach, I certainly hope not. Either way, Chris Del Conte is not going to pass me a hat like the collection plate at church and ask me to put in a 20. Like, they'll have the money for it. So it's basically monopoly money anyway. And you're paying your coach what the market says right now. You have to pay a coach if you feel you've got a national championship caliber coach. It's no different than NFL quarterbacks. Well, is he worth it? Well, this is what the market says you got to pay. So you need to pay it. My big thing from that is with Jeff Banks, Kyle Flood, and PK getting extensions and getting raises, it drives home the point of how Sark knocked it out of the freaking park with his initial staff. And like, I went back and looked at some initial staffs. You know, Rod, you played for that initial staff that Mac had. That was a good staff. And you had some guys, you know, Mike Tolleson, Greg Davis. They were with Mac for a long time. And even some of the replacements Mac had to hire, whether it was, you know, Oscar Giles or Bobby Kennedy, some of the replacements for a Daryl Drake or a Hardy McCrary lasted with Mac for a very, very long time. Bruce Chambers was there all the way to the end. So Mac had a good staff. I went back and looked at like Charlie's first staff. You guys realize that by the time Charlie Strong, I know we talked about this in the moment, by the time Charlie Strong got to the end of year two, before year three started, he had fired or at one Tommy Robinson and moved on. Every offensive hire from his initial staff was gone by the time he started year three.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we were yelling for Watson even quicker than that.
That's not good. That's not good.
No, and then, not good at all.
You know, Tom Herman's staff, I mean, he had guys that he probably should have moved on from that first year. Like, you demoted Derek Wareheim from offensive lines coach to tight ends coach. You know, you moved Corby Meekins to receivers to help Drew Maringer. You know, we weren't sure about the Tim Beck situation. And Tim Beck's a good dude, but, you know, I wouldn't call Tim Beck a great offensive coordinator. And we said that at the time. You know, the defensive hires, a lot of them worked out. But, you know, Tom Herman of that initial staff, by the time he got to year four, he only had two guys left from that initial staff, Stan Drayton and Oscar Giles. That was it. He had either fired or whatever happened to everybody else. And
we had been yelling about that continuity and needing continuity so bad. Go ahead.
No, and Sark got it with, you know, some guys that he brought from Bama, some guys that he wanted to hire. Like we said, the Andre Coleman thing, he corrected that. Rod, you were on top of that, and you know, he corrected that. And, you know, Tashard Choice at running backs coach for Stan Drayton has been a hell of a hire. He's gotten a really good hire with Chris Jackson. We talked about a lot of this stuff when the Kenny Baker and Johnny Nansen hires were made official. But, man, it just goes to show you, man, when somebody doesn't succeed as a blue blood, at a blue blood, initial staff, it might not be the reason, but more often than not, you can go back and look at it, and they made a lot of mistakes on that initial staff.
I agree with you. And it's oftentimes it's about what your vision is for the program, right? If that's a big part of it. And do you have the connections with it, you know, in terms of the coaching circles, because it's a good old boys network. Do you have the connection with other coaches that you have that clout that you can bring them on and they trust you and they trust your vision as a coach? Because, you know, that's what, I mean, Sark's, his vision for the program, I mean, he's been clear about it, and, you know, he's been, I think, pretty upfront and candid about what he sees for the program. And I think he sells that vision not only to the players, but to the coaches too. And that's pretty obvious.
Yep. And that network that Sark's been able to build over the years, and having so many close friends and that are also coaches that can send those fingerlings out to where, like, if you've worked with somebody in any field, like, you sort of get to know a person and how they work and if necessarily they're going to be able to fit personality wise with other people. And that's sort of something with this staff that seemed to be able to get those like-minded individuals, and he's able to fit them together because he's had a wide array of spots and he's been around coaches that have, say, coaching families within them. You talk about the Kiffins or the Shanahans, or then having, you know, the previous coaches with Saban and Carroll, and just like, there's just so many connections there. And when you prove your worth to those people and they understand how you work and they have a good idea of how you fit, or at least trust you whenever you come to them, that you're going to reciprocate those things for them whenever they need those opinions or get those recommendations.
Rod, are you going to be able to keep your pants on this draft season? Cause I know how much this stuff excites you on bad years. And this is a really good year.
It's a great year, man. It really is. Like I said, I think in the first two rounds, I mean, Texas could end up having like 5-6 guys taken in the first two rounds. Murphy, A.D. Mitchell, X-Man, J.T. Sanders, Jay Brooks, I think, is going to be another one. Tavondre Sweat. I mean, that's like 6 guys that are going to be drafted in the first two rounds for Texas.
Yeah.
In my opinion. And Jalen Ford. Then you got guys like Jalen Ford and Christian Jones. And, you know, I mean, like, that's – it's just been a while since you can watch the entire draft.
Yeah.
As a Longhorn fan, and you got to watch it to the end because there's a good chance, you know, one of your guys might get drafted.
Jordan Whittington or Ryan Watts, something like that.
Yeah, right. Sleepers like that too. Yeah, so I'm saying, like, it's fun, man. It really is. Like, I'm pretty giddy about the whole process this year. And I'm a mock slut, man. I've been on every damn mock draft that anybody, any jabroni puts out. Your boys get suckered into clicking on it. Because I'm just so excited for these guys, man. I'm excited for them. And I'm excited for Texas football now to start like this as the annual, you know, kind of tradition for Longhorn fans once again to follow their favorite players to the league.
Yep, it become appointment viewing again. I remember those 2000s back whenever you were around, Rod, in those classes when you had – and because back then Texas had a hell of a run of first-round picks and top five picks and guys going just from 2000 to, like, say, 2007. When you look at the top, it was more top-heavy. And then you started to see more volume as Max stacked up classes, and that's sort of what Texas is getting, just a beer bong of it right here from Sark's first class, because it's going to be appointment viewing this first season.
Rod, as we make our way out of here, I'm just going to say that is the second thing, maybe the second greatest thing I've ever heard a co-host of mine refer to themselves as. You calling yourself a mock slut. The only thing that surpasses it is one time on the air, Craig and I were talking about gravy, and I asked Craig, well, what you like, brown gravy or you know, cream gravy? Craig goes, I'm a gravy whore. And I was like, okay.
I was listening to that, and I think I texted you gravy whore. It was great.
Like, all right.
No, I think you guys made a promo out of that, because I actually think I remember hearing it on the promo.
Oh, we did. We did.
It was great. Yeah. Like, wow, that is awesome.
Just got the voice of the Longhorns to say on the air that he's a gravy whore. All right.
He's a gravy whore. Hey, you know what? I feel him on that, man. Hey, gravy makes everything better. Gravy
agreed. Better, if someone's making gravy, I'm going to be pouring it on till it's gone.
Exactly.
Brown gravy, cream gravy, the I don't know, the liquid gravy that you make.
Jalapeno gravy, man, it's all good. Mushroom gravy, give it to me. It's a gravy, give it to me, man.
Well, I haven't had
to go full circle, though, Jeff. You did say things that Rod hates, though, and we're getting very close to white condiments.
White condiments, yes.
Yeah, that's all right. I'm not
that's
a gravy
the one thing. That's the one thing he doesn't like that I know of.
True.
That is true. That's true. Good point.
All right. Well, that's a good, as good a place as any to end it. Let's go ahead and wrap it up, and we'll be back to do it again next week. Matt, thanks for everything, man.
You're more than welcome.
Rod, appreciate the time and the knowledge.
Anytime, brother, anytime.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
For Matt, for Rod, for everybody at 24/7 Sports, the 24/7 Sports Podcast Network, and the Horns 24/7 podcast feed, where you can get Longhorn Blitz each and every week. Just search Horns 24/7. That's Horns 247, no dashes, slashes, or spaces. Click that follow button whenever the feed pops up. You get it every Wednesday morning when it drops. And thanks to Matt, you get all of our archives. Our classic interviews and shows are available on the Longhorn Blitz SoundCloud page.
Yep, just type in Longhorn Blitz.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
For the Horns 24/7 family, for the Longhorn Blitz family, I'm Jeff Howe. Thank you so much for downloading and listening, and we will catch you again on the next episode.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Dan Orlovsky, are you still a Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback available in the draft guy?
I think the three things that make it stand out for me are, number one, I think his ball placement versus man coverage is the best in the draft. Every quarterback in the NFL is accurate. He's got the best on tape. Number two, most transferable stuff to the NFL. And then I think the third thing is pocket peace.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.